It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will. But then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Alright. Okay. I did notice when I listened to the audio that it was quicker. So I like talking over the lady that says, this audio is being recorded. I am fascinated by the fact that that can happen, but it doesn't show up on the recording. Like, I don't, that's weird. But anyway, I want to talk about Art.
Okay.
He's this guy I know. He's a jerk. No. I'm becoming more, I mean, we know Art for Art's sake. You know, it's MGM's Latin motto, because nothing really means what it means. But whatever. But we understand Art as its own concept.
Sure.
And I think we have discovered Art as a commodity, Art as a business. Mm-hmm. Very common. I want to talk about Art as an experience.
Okay.
Because I have recently discovered there are, well, I've talked about this in other forms before, but the thing that put this in my head right now, there are songs that I don't necessarily think are good songs and that I don't necessarily want to listen to, but I very much want to sing. Like, if it comes on, I'll sing with it. And I mean, generally not a terrible song, but like, it's, well, okay. A better example is stage plays. And a best example is Oklahoma. I think, having watched it, having not participated, it is probably really fun to be in a production of Oklahoma. I bet it's a good time. It looks like it's a good one to do. Fun time. I do not believe it is a fun time to watch a production of Oklahoma. I'm not a fan of that particular thing, but it looks like it's real fun. And yeah, there are songs that I don't know the melody to because I have so long sang the harmony part, because I just enjoy singing along with it. And I'll be like, I don't know that I could sing the melody if I wanted to at this point. It came up today. I was listening to No Air by Jordan Sparks and the original iteration, which was Jordan Sparks and Chris Brown. And don't get me wrong, I do like that song. It's a good song. But mostly when I hear it, I just want an excuse to sing along. And I know all the bits. I know all the Chris Brown bits. So, which always feels weird to me. But, you know, that's the guy part. So that's more in my register or whatever. And I just love singing along with it. And I'm like, if I couldn't sing along with it, like, how much would I be into listening to? I don't know. But I think this is a thing we need to consider more. And the same thing with there's a lot of actors who seem to just be in everything. And some of them, they just really want the money. And some of them, I don't know, they have bad agents. But some of them just really like making movies and being on movie sets. And it's like a fun time. And so you have to, because of the commodification, you have to keep your career in mind. But I honestly think in a lot of cases, they don't care if the movie ends up being good or not. It's just fun to make movies. Christopher Walken famously will be in fucking Eric Roberts. Now, in Eric Roberts' case, it may somewhat be money. But Christopher Walken, I mean, Christopher Walken has done cameos that I have seen in movies that are worse than movies you and I could make. With our own money, like, really just dog shit. And to be fair, it was like one scene, and he had he wasn't in it a lot, but he was in it. And Eric Roberts will do anything. I mean, he literally showed up on a podcast about how Eric Roberts would do anything and said, I turned down nothing. So, you know, but I don't know. Have you got any stuff like that, like, I don't think we do enough of that. Like, not enough people paint for themselves only, you know? Like, I feel like that's a category of art, and I'm not sure enough people give it credence in their lives. What do you think?
The category
Of art that is not designed to necessarily be shared or displayed or certainly not commodified, but just something whose benefit is largely ephemeral in that you like participating in it. The end product, whatever it is, maybe not worth crap. Certainly not, the point is not to share that, it's just to sort of experience.
So, I hear about all the time a person that, oh yeah, I've probably written six novels, but I'd never let anyone read them.
Really?
Oh yeah,
Really? Oh.
sure. Or
I
put
mean,
the
I do know
first,
people who have written some and they let me see them and it was a bad idea.
or who paint pictures that they never hang up, or never show anybody. And I do think it's similar to a person who sings in the shower or sings their heart out in the car, but they would never sing publicly, So yeah, I think there are a lot of artistic expressions that people participate in for their own particular enjoyment. It's not for anybody else. And not only is it not for anybody else, but they don't want anybody else to read it
Yeah,
or see it
which,
or whatever.
see, and I haven't encountered a lot of people who are honest about that kind of thing, which may be the very thing we're describing is if I say I wrote a novel, but I don't want anybody to see it, I was like, oh, come on, you wrote a whole novel, somebody should see it. So I don't hear a lot. I think we need to shine more of a light on this and appreciate this. And I mean, there are certain art forms that are by their very nature like that.
Well, I think the internet has made it so that some of those people do put the stuff out there. I mean, a lot of fan fiction would be something a person would have filled journals with a long time ago and never showed anybody. And now, thanks to the internet, they find people that maybe this person will like this. They actually post it. They do like it, even though they kind of even all acknowledge, well, it's not Hemingway or anything, but we like it. And so I think a lot of people who, I think the internet has made it so that some of those people do share those things in their corners of the internet with art that I think even the people who are enjoying it would agree is never going to be a best-selling novel or hanging in a gallery anywhere. But we all like it, and that's all that matters.
And it completely undermines my entire idea. If you're just saying, now it's just normal art for everybody, and then who cares anymore? So it's all terrible. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Magical Talking Head Podcast, the only podcast in the world where, if you listen carefully, approximately 64 bars in to every episode, we do have a key change. It's subtle, but you notice it. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 742.
I mean, I needed something for the cold open. That was what popped in my head when I was belting out the Chris Brown portion of No Air. That's what occurred to me. You don't understand what kind of podcast pressure I'm under here. This could honestly be a good example of things that's just fun to do and should never be shared. But we do share it with all of you. What is our deal? I hear you asking.
What
I'm under so much pressure.
is
We have a hat, and it's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghead@gmail.com. People like to write in to that email address with things, comments, questions, topics, stuff, their lives. And the hat magically, all on its own, because it's magic, forwards the emails to us. We read them, we talk about them. That's about it. And usually not a lot of that. So, it's hard coming up with the only podcast in the world and cold open every time. There is a guy, Jules Gill. He does stuff for What Culture and also for FGS. Anyway, he's a YouTuber that I see a lot of things, and he has his bit talks about a list chosen just for you. Yes, you, the person who, and then he frequently says something about himself, which I'm like, oh, that's a good, that we should have done that. Then we could, you know, now I have to think of something that either no other podcast does, or that I'm willing to claim no other podcast does.
Right.
So how was your week?
Good. Good. Work's picking up, so that's good. I forgot to mention last time that we're watching Murderbot, so I wanted to bring it up this time.
Oh yes, you mentioned to me, you texted me about that, but it's it's barely, you've got what, like two episodes or something?
Yeah, it's, and you know, a new one comes out once a week and they're like 30 minutes. That, to me, that's even worse, having to wait a week for an episode and it's only 30 minutes. But they're very good so far. Very, very good.
And it's like, I'm excited. I was a fan of the original material. It looks like they're taking some liberties, which you have to, because they're short novellas, and it appears that this first season is basically the first novella. But it sounds like they're putting in a lot of stuff that works well in terms of there's a lot more character depth with the whole sort of ensemble, and it looks nice.
Oh, yeah, so, it's really fun.
I'm psyched for that one.
Well, And the good thing about them being short is, like, if we feel like it, we can say, if we want something to watch, whatever, hey, let's watch all the Murderbots again, because they're just like, it's just an hour and a half at this point. It's only an hour and a half, and it's fun, and you see things you didn't see before, and it's, and even if you, it's thoroughly entertaining, it's very, very good. We like it a lot. But but other than that, not a lot going on. How's your week?
Did you do anything for Memorial Day weekend?
Oh, we went home, just spent time on the farm. Not a lot to say about that. We went out to the cemetery as we always do and, you know, put flowers on the graves and whatever. That was very nice. I probably should have mentioned it. I just don't have anything to say about it that would interest anybody. But thanks for asking.
We went back home for Memorial Day too. This doubled as, well, it was my sister-in-law's 50th birthday. And then also my nephew just graduated high school. So Saturday we had her birthday party, and then Sunday we had a cookout that was doubled as his graduation party.
Oh, okay.
Which was fascinating for me because I was sitting near all the young people. And so I got to overhear them interacting and see what my nephew is like around them and stuff. And also one of the friends, several of us made the connection that day that this one 18-year-old that he like knows and is friends with and is dating like his best friend or whatever is the grandchild of friends of the family, is somebody who we knew when she was like seven. And none of us put together the same thing. But those friends of the family were also at this cookout. And so we finally put it together when they were asking a random girl, like, are you cold? Do you need a jacket? I've got a jacket in the car. And we were like, oh, that's the same Abby. So that was interesting. But yeah, not a lot. Not a lot happened there. This weekend, for Trish's birthday, we're going to Decorah, Iowa. I think I mentioned this is one of the few times where her birthday weekend isn't Memorial Day weekend. So we're taking our own trip. So a few hours from now, or several days after y'all see this, we will head to Decorah for a couple nights at the Winnesheek Hotel and Opera House. And I'm not entirely sure what we're going to do, except there is a Norwegian American museum I want to check out. And Trish really wants to check out the Seed Savers Exchange, which is apparently a thing where they carefully maintain seeds and make sure there's no crossbreeding or whatever. So you got the original strain. It's basically eugenics, but for plants. We want to maintain the purity of the race of plants. I need that last part to be clear. Do not clip this out of context, all you terrible tabloid journalists. This is all about plants. But yes, yeah, so I don't know. It's a tiny town. Like smaller than Grinnell.
Cora,
Yeah, it's got like 7,700 people or something. It's
yeah.
little, so we'll see. But that'll be fun.
Yeah.
We are still watching. We are just about finished with Somebody Somewhere, which I have adored, but it takes a lot out of you emotionally, so I think I'm ready for a resolution. We have watched another episode of Interior Chinatown. It is mostly just getting weirder. Like, they are leaning into this meta, it's a TV show within a TV show, magical realism. Like, I don't know where we're headed, but it's like I understand less now. I'm still super into it. Trish is more on the fence, but it's getting very strange. And we snuck in a technically we're watching a third show. We don't do that very often. But do you remember a long time ago I talked about a show called Last One Laughing that had a bunch of Canadian comics and they were in a room and the joke was the bit was in 6 hours, if you smile or laugh, you're out. And the last one to survive won a bunch of money for charity or something.
Oh, yeah, I kind of remember that.
And I knew a fair number of the comedians. There were some famous ones. Tom Green, Colin Mochrie were in there, but there are a few I didn't know. Well, they've done a bunch of these, and occasionally Amazon's like, "Oh, you want to watch, the German one?" And I'm like, "No, I don't give a shit." Apparently, it started as a Japanese thing. I recently discovered that, but via YouTube, trying to give me things about all the people I like, I learned and eventually looked. They made a UK one earlier this year, or they made it last year, but they aired it this year, and it has 10 comedians, a host and a co-host, and I know and love literally all of them. So I am super into this. For those of you who are in the British, hosted by Jimmy Carr, co-hosted by Roisin Conaty, I assume because she wouldn't last more than 3 seconds if she was a comedian in the competition because she laughs all the time. But our contestants, Bob Mortimer, Richard Iowade, Joe Wilkinson, Joe Lycett, Judy Love, Harriet Kelmsley, Sarah Pascoe, and three others. Isn't it exciting? I don't know. I'm realizing none of you probably know these names anyway, but I'm very excited. And it's just on Prime if anybody wants. I mean, you probably have to have a Prime subscription, but it's fun. We only watched one episode, but I laughed a lot. Have I
So,
talked about my crying thing? Did I talk last week about my crying thing?
I don't think so.
I have determined that 80 to 90% of all issues under the rubric we would call toxic masculinity would be resolved if we would just teach boys to cry the same way we're cool with girls doing it. It is an unbelievable catharsis, both emotionally and physiologically. And I can tell you right now, those times when guys yell or punch a wall, they are feeling the exact same feelings that women are feeling when they need to the catharsis of crying. It's so awesome. We should all be doing it all the time. It's great. But I have discovered that I may have sublimated a little bit in my life. Laughing because it has similar emotional and physiological benefits. And I think I try and sort of laugh easy as another way to sort of deal with those emotions. But so this made me laugh a lot, which is always a good sign. I'm still playing Expedition 33, loving the game more all the time. So pretty. It's a real sad game. It made me tear up a couple times, but it made me laugh a lot more. There is some solid writing. They are really showing, not telling. Like, you are getting drip fed the setting and the background and stuff via very organic, like nobody does an exposition dump. It's just in conversations. And now we've got this weird gimmick where I'm like talking to people and it's raising my relationship levels, and then that unlocks more scenes where like two characters I'm not involved with, and there's just a cut scene that sort of gives you more about their backstory and stuff. It's a very interesting time. The gameplay itself is pretty cool. I'm starting to feel kind of good at it. I don't know. It's a real good time. continue to highly recommend. But let's discuss the elephant in the room. Or shall I say, the unicorn in the room? Or shall I say, the giraffe in the room? I don't know, I thought maybe I could just list off more animals. But we saw Death of a Unicorn.
Oh.
It is now available to stream. It was available to stream for $20. We were like, no. But then it was available for $10. And I was like, okay, I really need to see this. Because I've been chomping at the bit. You know. Everybody knows. I really wanted to see this. I was prepped in that it came out and no one mentioned it ever again. It came out in late March.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody's talking about it anywhere. Which means it's probably not very good, but also probably not very bad. Because if it was one or the other, they'd be talking about it.
Sure.
I came out of it not liking it. Trish came out of it a little bit liking it. The very next day, we thought we sort of flipped. Here's what I will say. I'm hugely disappointed. We both agree. We don't think it probably is a good movie, per se. I find it very much a heartbreaker. Like, it just could have been so much more. I looked it up. This is essentially this guy's first. He wrote and directed this, and this is basically his first feature film, writing and directing. He has a long history as a producer. And I think some of that may came through because it was a very cheap movie. It was $15 million, which, given the cast, most of that money had to go to the cast. Sure. Because this is Paul Rudd and Jenna Ortega. It's also Richard E. Grant, Will Poulter, Anthony Corrigan, who's Noho Hank from Barry. Jessica Hines, who has no business being here because she was completely underutilized. Tay Leone, just everybody is in this movie. Stephen Park. Stephen Park's been showing up everywhere lately. He is having his best career. Anytime you need an Asian dude of a certain age, Stephen Park is there. He's very good. What cracks me up is he is the Korean convenience store owner in Do the Right Thing. Back when he was like nobody. So we keep watching shit now and I pause it and I'm like, that's the grocery store owner from Do the Right Thing. You know, the Korean man screaming about he was black during a riot. Like, that guy, that's him. So it's just really funny because he's everywhere right now. But he's in this. Trish is making me question this. I think it's a really neat idea for a movie. I think they forgot to then make a movie that was good with the, I think it mostly was the idea.
Yeah.
People have been very weird. Some people have said Paul Rudd and Jenna Ortega's performances and their chemistry sort of carry a lot of it. Other people have said they're both great actors. They were terrible choices for these roles. And I'm a little on that side of things.
Oh, okay.
Everybody's sort of underutilized. It's fine. I had a good time. I'm not sorry I saw it. And it has sparked a lot of comments. Like, Trish and I have talked about this movie a lot afterwards, which says something.
Sure.
Because we don't, as long as we're not talking about how much it sucked, which we're not, by and large. But just underutilized. Richard E. Grant, they could have done so much more with his character. And he's game for anything. That dude. Have you seen some of this? He's amazing, and he'll do anything. Watch him in The Franchise. He was recently in The Franchise series, and he's incredible. I love him. He's one of my favorites out there, and they totally underutilized him. I will say this. This is a good feather in the cap for Will Poulter. Will Poulter is very much an up-and-coming successful actor. He is largely still in the British sphere, and he is largely drama-based. But this really let him fuck around with his comedy chops, and he did a real good job. So, but yeah, I was sad and disappointed a little bit in it.
Mm.
People also got real excited about the effects, but I'm like, it was kind of ropey. Like, it was neat ideas, but at no point were you ever in, like, you're like, that's CG. That just looks like CG. Also, no spoilers, the ending, wild. Like, not like, oh my God, how'd they think of that? Why did you end your movie that way? It's confusing. Anyway, so yeah, that's out there. But that's all I really got. There hasn't been a lot going on. Too much here, I don't think.
Yeah. It's my granddaughter's birthday as we're recording, but
it is. It is.
It'll be long gone and once people see this.
She's here now. No, wait, that's not.
It's two today.
All right. Well, we got some emails. Let's do one of those.
Sure. I mean, that's supposed to be our shtick.
Yeah, yeah. That's the whole show.
Make sure it's
not anonymous.
Yes, I'll make sure. This is from Stu.
Stu's not anonymous.
Nope.
Stu's one of my, Welsh.
One of my favorite Iowans. Let's see. There's a wonderful scene in A Man on the Inside, set in a retirement home, where they discuss failing memory as you get older. How is your memory holding up?
Just for people who not, A Man on the Inside was that Ted Danson-led sitcom that I spoke highly of.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember the exact scene, but that is stuff that comes up a lot.
You don't remember. He doesn't remember this scene. How's your memory? Anyway.
I forgot the question. I mean, it's not good. Trisha's memory is going horrid.
Oh, it is?
Like, she probably shouldn't be holding down a job. No, it's all just little stuff. But yeah, she's constantly amazed by it. We think some of it, there are some, how do I speak nicely? My wife might be entering a stage in her life, medically speaking, where this can be a common side effect. And it's very normal and natural for a woman of her age or a person of her age. So it's nothing to be worried about, but it is an issue, and it's a big issue. And I have always had a very good memory and have always thrived on my very good memory. I still think it's pretty good, but it is so much worse than it was. Also, I'm not saying this as any sort of personal story, just a generalized anecdote, but if you do a lot of weed on a regular basis, it can have impact on your memory. So if any of you knew anyone who was like that, their memory might be suffering in addition to any way they already said that it was suffering. So yeah, memory loss is fucking up our household pretty hard right about now. And it's not great.
My memory has never been good, as longtime listeners, watchers, whatever, I surely know. I'm 56 now, and I'd say about a decade ago, a new kind of memory problem cropped up it's probably happened on the show, where I'll be talking and I'll stop because I can't think of what the next word is. And it's not a hard word. Not a difficult word. You have to pop in and tell me what the word is.
Yes.
I mean, it could just be any word. It could be a car or house. I mean, it could
That's
really be
thing,
that simple.
Because, like, we've, at least for me, this has happened all my life, but, like, with big words. Mm-hmm. You know, every once in a while, and I'll say, like, I've lost a word, and it'll be like, oh, attrition, that was the word. Like,
no, something sure,
like
yeah. That.
But nowadays, it'll literally be like, so I was going to the...
Yeah.
And it's store, and you've just lost store. Trish gets this a lot. Trish will just stop in mid-sentence, and it'll go on long enough that I'm like, and?
Yeah.
But I've also said, yeah, where it's just, I just lose a word that is a very common
Right.
word.
Now, I've been told that this happens with people, any person, regardless of age, if they're not
Yeah.
getting adequate sleep, that can happen. But, and that when it first started with me, I was not getting adequate sleep. But I think I get okay sleep now, and it still happens.
This is interesting.
But
Because Trish, like I said, Trish gets it a lot, and I don't really have a sense of how much sleep Trish gets because Trish watches YouTubes until she falls asleep, and then in the middle of the night she'll wake up and like watch more. So even she doesn't really know how much she's sleeping, but probably not great.
yeah, I knew of a case where the person, a doctor, told them that it was a sleep problem, and then when their sleep improved, that problem went away. But this was a person who was a younger person, so I don't know. So I still have that problem, but also other in the last, or pretty much since I turned 50, more ordinary, what I would consider more ordinary memory problems. Because when I was growing up and they talked about old people having memory problems, it was never described as they're speaking in a sentence and they stop because they can't remember the
Yeah,
next
no,
word.
it was they
That,
don't recognize their children, that
well,
kind
and
of
things
shit.
like that. So I have had
They
what I
left the
would,
keys in a fire.
I have had what I would consider more conventional memory problems, such as, my wife and I are driving away from the house, and did I close the garage door? Did
No, 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 no,
I
no. Your delivery made it such that it looked for a
look like
second
I
like
was
you
forgetting?
couldn't remember what your memory
No,
problem.
but like that. Like, did I close the garage door? Did I, or, and not only will I not remember if I close the garage door, there's a good chance that I didn't close the garage door. So there's, and those are two different things, right? Because if I go back, oh, I did close the garage door. But I can forget that I closed it, or I can forget to close it, two different, and that happens. I can forget, like, I'll be loading the dishwasher, and this is a thing that I've done in this house for 20 years. I'm the guy that does the dishes, and there's a certain routine, and for most of that 20 years, that routine's just gone off without a hitch. But in recent years, I'd say maybe since I turned 50, the evening can wear on, and I can, get up to get a drink of something and realize, oh, I did all the dishes, put soap in the thing and everything, didn't turn the thing on. What? What is that? But that happens.
I'm getting a lot of, I mean, and this has been around forever and it's a gradual thing, but it's the number of why did I walk into this room ones
Yeah. Well,
is
I mean, that's been a
really
thing.
out of control.
Yeah.
Especially me. I'm home alone all day. I'm walking around, like I'm doing chores, I'm going all around, and then I forget. And I've just been doing 12 things, so it could be anything, and there is no one else here to help me remember. Sometimes it just never comes back. Or like hours later, I'm like, oh fuck, it was that. Okay, let us segue now into what are we doing about this? We've established this is a problem that we have. What are we doing to make it better?
Nothing. Doing anything.
So people are just gonna rob shit out of your garage.
I mean, so again, my memory's not been bad my whole life. And so there are have always been things I've done to fix it, like keep a calendar and so on and so forth. But I
In point
mean,
about your memory has been bad your whole life.
yeah.
Sorry, you said you combined two sentences, so you said my memory's not been bad my whole life.
Oh, no, that's sorry.
But I think you were saying my memory's not good, and then you switched to has been bad my
Yeah,
whole life.
the point I was trying to make is I've spent my whole life trying to figure out how to overcome bad memory. So you would think that as my memory's getting worse, I would have some skills to help me cope with that, which
I would think that.
I do if it's the kind of memory problem that I've had in the past. But if it's like forgetting a word, I mean, what do you do about that? Or, well, okay, so there is something I have
Read the
started doing
dictionary.
about remembering to close the garage door or whatever. Part of it is to say out loud, I've done this thing, or to ask my wife to notice. Because now, if a lot of times, if I ask, did I close the garage door? She'll say yes, because she's actually paying attention, because she knows I'm going to ask. So that's one thing.
I like this system. I think this is good.
That I've done. But also, you do what a lot of obsessive compulsive people do. You do the thing like 3 or 4 times. And that way, like, you push the button, or you push the start button, and then you tap the thing 6 times, because you'll probably remember that you tapped the thing 6 times. So I must have pushed the power button. You know, you do that.
See, I like to say that I don't really suffer from these things. Or I should rephrase, that these are not new things for me, because a lot of what you are describing is manifestations of my anxiety anyway. Where I would never forget something, but I would always check it like 4 times because I don't trust myself and things like that.
Yeah.
It is why my anxiety can occasionally be misconstrued as OCD. But trust me, when we do a screener, I am not OCD. OCD people have got some shit to deal with, and I am relieved to say I do not have to deal with that. But I do similar behaviors for slightly different reasons.
Yeah.
I would like to say that. I can't say that because, as you may recall, a couple months ago, I almost burned down our goddamn house.
Well, and also you drove away with the thing in your gas.
Okay. I almost burned down other places as well. Yes. My point is, I clearly suffer from this. So my decades of being anxious about this kind of thing has in no way prepared me to not do this, apparently. So here I am. I talked about this I had therapy yesterday. So let me hit you with one. When I post the podcast, I do all the deals. I get the audio together. I get the video together. I upload to YouTube. I put the thing on the blog. I attach it there. And then I make a post on social media about how the new episode has dropped. I do it in 3 places. I do it on Facebook. I currently do it on Twitter. And I now do it on Blue Sky. I've done it on Facebook and Twitter forever. And on both of those, occasionally, people like it, or mostly just like it. Occasionally they'll say a comment, but not very often. And it's listeners of ours. I assume if it just happens to show up in their feed, they're like, oh, cool, like, whatever. It's not a thing. But this has led my brain to believe this, combined with the fact that we have certain people in our lives who listen, or at least I do, to an episode every once in a while. They don't listen consistently, but every once in a while they listen. All of this has brought me to the point where I think it is necessary to do this, because some people forget when it is or won't listen if they are not directly reminded.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, let's break this down a little bit. And I only use Twitter and Facebook for these things, and Blue Sky for these things. So it happens once in a blue moon that somebody makes any sort of reference to it. Actively, no one is following me on Blue Sky. So that is, like, by definition, having zero impact anywhere. And we have been producing a podcast every Thursday for over 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
We have comfortably 6 listeners. Also, I don't know if you know about how podcasts work. I have a piece of software that I tell it what podcasts I listen to, and it just finds the new ones and downloads them to me.
Mm-hmm.
I need to have no interaction, and I certainly do have no interaction with the social media of the podcasts I am following.
Mm.
And as far as YouTube, I'll tell you a trick about YouTube. If you subscribe to a channel and watch their videos, when a new one comes up, YouTube will tell you, like, right away. They have a vested interest. So given all of this, what am I doing? What I would like the best is to just stop marketing it at all. I would like to post the podcast and get on with my life. I would like to never visit Twitter again. I honestly don't see a point of visiting Blue Sky just for the hat, and I'm not in social media. And I would like to visit Facebook once every month just to see if somebody messaged me. That is what I would like. Why am I not doing that? Anxiety. Because I'm like, maybe this is a maybe somebody, it is important, but it's not, right? It sort of couldn't be. Like, I maybe we lose when my brother listens every once in a while, because maybe he just saw it pop up on Facebook. But, you know, okay. I mean, it seems like a weird reason to do all this every week. It's not like we're trying to grow the podcast. It's not like we've had a new listener in a while. At this point, it's barely a podcast. It's just a family where only two of us talk. So a lot of older families are like this. Mommy and daddy speak, and the children sit there and be quiet. and we will feed you content. So, yeah. If any of you got feelings on why I should or shouldn't do that, let me know on the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com. Also, if you want us to listen to your bummer of a topic about how we're all getting old and it's sad now, do like Stu. And write in themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. I don't think he considered this because he has Welsh blood in him, and the Welsh are famously immortal. So I think aging doesn't really occur to him. So, and that's fine. But
I think Stu should get his own podcast called Do Like Stu. That's a good podcast name for Stu.
And that's the whole deal, right? You don't actually think a podcast needs to exist where you do things the way Stu does. You just think a podcast should exist called Do Like Stu.
So I think, first of all, yeah, that's a great title. But second of all, the podcast could be him doing things and showing you how to do them.
No. I want padlock, decorative padlock folding. Stu's going to get that joke, and I'm happy about that.
Okay.
No, now I'm seeing Do Like Stu, D-E-W. And it's like a 90s extreme sports thing. And so it's Stu, and he's like on a mountain bike, and he like pounds back a thing of Mountain Dew, and then like jumps off the cliff or whatever. And then a wingsuit opens up, and it's like,
that's good. I like that.
Welsh to the max. Whoa!
It wouldn't even have to be real. It could be something that Stu makes, like with CGI and stuff, to make it look like he's doing these amazing things. But yeah, he has to pound a Mountain Dew, then he has to do it. Yeah.
I should say, there's a new series of Taskmaster currently airing, and it's pretty nice. And among other things, it has an actual American in it. Huh. Like, they've had Americans, but they're all like Americans who live in the UK.
Oh, yeah.
They got Jason Mantzoukas, who I think I've talked about, is a comedic actor who shows up in all sorts of sitcoms and things. You would probably know him best as Derek from The Good Place.
Yeah.
But he shows up. He's Brooklyn Nine-Nine. He was in a ton. He was on The League. He was in Parks and Rec. Oh, he's in a lot of things. And he apparently – have I already talked about this on here? I apologize. He is a fan of the show, and he contacted them and was like, I'll move there for a few months to do this if you can let me. And they said sure. But it's like a thing. Like, apparently it hasn't come up on the show, but I've seen interviews on set. He was very vocal about the fact that he is losing money on this because he didn't come over to work on anything else. So the cost of, but they're having a lot of fun with the culture clash aspects of it. But also, he's insane, so that's fun. But yeah, it's a good group. I like it.
I was gonna say earlier, you know, you're talking about that show where you were listing a whole bunch of British.
Yeah, last one person. Laughing.
Some of those names,
you get it?
Yeah, some of those names you mentioned, I'm vaguely familiar with, mostly because they're on panel shows and stuff all the time.
Oh yeah,
and I was thinking, how cool would it be to be that person? Like, people are constantly calling you up to be on their panel show. I mean, wouldn't you feel like a really interesting and funny person if you were constantly being called up to be on panel shows? It would seem like a huge compliment.
I would. I don't. The problem is you get to be that kind of person from different directions. So, like, if you're an essayist or a former member of parliament who is just, you know, charismatic enough to be on these things, or you were a famous something and so you got on a little bit and you were good enough that you do it, that's got to be uplifting. But in some cases, you are like, did TV and movies, and now you kind of don't do that anymore. And you're like it. There are some people that's their whole job now, and depending on what their job sort of was before, it can be a good thing or a bad thing. I personally would love it. I would that would be like the best career for me. I would think that would be such a great time.
But it just seems like such a compliment, you know, like you
absolutely
said.
Absolutely.
Even if
you're like,
even
you're
if,
funny enough,
even if you're not getting a lot of gigs otherwise, you are one of the go-tos for every single one of these things.
Yes.
I mean, I don't, not
and
just one or two,
skill.
But all of them. Yeah.
It is a skill, because every once in a while, a celebrity gets to guest star on one of them. And it's fun to see them in that environment, but like, they can't hang.
So I guess I get, now that you mentioned that, that's probably part of what makes me think it's cool, because that's a skill that I really admire. A person being able to get into an environment like that and have interesting and or funny things to say that make people want to watch. Like, I almost admire that skill more than I admire whatever skill they had before in being in sitcoms and stuff. Like, I'm more impressed that you can get on a panel show and entertain people so much that all the panel shows want you. That impresses me even more than any of whatever else they did that made them famous.
I think it's a close cousin to improv skills.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Sort. But it's also a close cousin to just being a good conversationalist at a party, which.
Well, exactly. I love that. I think I really admire
that.
I admire that skill a lot more than just about.
I love the ability of these people to lie, because you know how much I admire lying. But like, this thing where there are. Stand-ups have this in general, where it's like you don't know where the line is, and it arguably doesn't matter because it's just about entertainment. But like, and even like one of the great panel shows is Would I Lie to You? And the best contestant in the world on Would I Lie to You is Bob Mortimer, because he tells insane stories that often turn out to be true. Except the whole premise of the show is you tell, there's a one card thing that has a sentence on it that you've never seen before, and you read it and it's true or not. And then you have to tell the story behind it, and they have to figure out if you're telling the truth or lying. I believe the rule is technically just what's on the card. Is it true or not? Because he'll tell stories that are true at the end, but some of it I'm just like, that's not. He had one school story that would have been like in the 60s and 70s, and his teacher had this weird robotic lion that was not part of, like, he threw that in and the story was true, but that wasn't part. And it's like, yeah, that's almost certainly not. So then it also constantly is begging the question, like, where's the line? And I love thinking about that. I'm like, did that really happen? And panel show people, I think, can really dance in and out of truth. And somebody like Johnny Vegas or whatever can really just like say a sentence, half of that sentence is true, half of it is not, and maybe he doesn't even know or care which it is. Like, that's the skill I want. Which, going home for Memorial Day weekend, I got to see the original people trained to ignore my bullshit, which is to say my niece and nephew on that side. They were the originators of the phrase whatever Uncle Tony. And it's funny to me because my niece and nephew next door, we go there and I'll say crazy shit and they'll still be like, is that true? And I'll be like, no. Hello? I told my mother-in-law says, because she had a little bit of a scratchy throat, and she's like, my voice sounds, oh no, sorry, she had some fluid in her ear, and she's like, it makes my voice sound really weird. I don't know what it sounds like to all of you. And I said, it's who's the famous, who's the guy in the old movies, You Dirty Rat or whatever? And I knew exactly who it was. I'm doing a bit here, but they don't know. And I'm like, and they can't place it, which they're old people. They should absolutely know who James Cagney is. What the fuck? But anyway, I was like, James Cagney, that's who you sound like. And she's like, really? And I was like, no. Literally 5 minutes ago in dinner conversation, we talked about how much I love lying to people. Also, you've known me for over 2 decades. What the hell? But meanwhile, my niece and the original, whatever, Uncle Tony, niece and nephew, I say shit to them and they just glance in my direction and the light goes out of their eyes and they just look away. And I'm like, that's how you, like, they don't even bother denying me at this point. They're just like, what is happening? But then, fun fact, apparently I missed it, but when all the 18-year-olds were talking, they got into a discussion about when they used to come over to the house and they would look for a little guy named Sean who would hide around, and he had a purple coat, and he was like a little sort of fey creature that would hide, and all the kids would hunt for him. And I fucking invented that guy when they were little. I said, like, did you see that guy? And it became this whole thing, and the kids would come over, and they do hunts, and it's still apparently stuck in their brain. So that was very heartwarming for me. Made up bullshit that really influenced them into adulthood is kind of my whole deal.
Sure.
So I like that.
Hey, before we get to the end of the podcast, oh, I can
tell by the tone you're setting up a joke.
No, I'm not. Oh, I got to give you an emoji alert. You know how the kids don't like the thumbs up emoji? They think it's sarcastic or whatever.
Yeah.
The smiley face emoji is bad.
Now, which one?
Just the regular plain smiley one.
All right, because I don't use that one because I'm like, there, I have so many varieties. What is bad about it? What do we not like about? Did Freya tell you this?
No. And now I've forgotten. Let's see.
God damn it. But it's bad. Don't smile, people. If you take one thing away from this podcast, never smile. Like, what are we talking about?
Hold on. I'm going to look it up. They think it's disingenuous. It's kind of like the thumbs up. It's like it goes back to it doesn't mean what people think it means.
Which is interesting because in my mind, there are emojis specifically designed to be disingenuous smiles. And I use them when that's what I'm attempting to convey.
Oh, it looks like
the big cheesy grin one is usually the one.
It looks like the crying, laughing one. They don't like that either, but I don't know about that.
Oh, man. I love that one.
Generation. Let's see. They view it as sarcastic, passive aggressive, and even dismissive.
I mean, I'm generally pretty dismissive of young people, so. This is a minefield. I was watching an episode of Game Changer, and they introduced somebody with grip emoji, something emoji, and I was like, and they just literally said the emojis. And I was like, I don't know what that means, and I looked it up, and I found out the internet has no consensus on what would be the grip emoji anyway. So
I have no idea what that is.
Never could find out. Yeah.
Grip emoji?
Some people thought parts of the internet thought it was the handshake one. Some thought it was the prayer one. Like, I don't. There's nothing called that. So I don't know what the fuck's going on. And none of the people who listen to this are young enough to be able to help us in this.
It does fascinate me that.
You old.
That. So obviously. Ostensibly, the emojis are supposed to represent, you know, you can even hover over them and then they're described as smiley face animes. So you're told really what kind of emotion that they're supposed to convey, right? So there is, again, presumably and ostensibly this, you know, it's supposed to be kind of a universal graphical language that people are using in their communications, because they're usually quite simple. I mean, now there's so many of them that it does get a little complex and ambiguous, but there are certainly a set that you think that that's going to mean this to pretty much everyone with variation that is insignificant. But then over time, for anybody, really any one person, to take it, say, as the opposite, or now the smiley face is a bad thing, but not just one person, a whole cohort of people. That's pretty extraordinary. That, I mean, it's not surprising if you understand how, you know, sociology
well,
works, but
it's just language. It's the same way that.
Yeah, exactly. Words right. Right.
Change but their meaning over but, time.
But for whatever reason, it, even if you understand what you just said, or you understand how, you know, linguistics and sociology, how they work, somehow it's still extraordinary. It's still like, wow, how did all of these people communicating in mediated interaction, like not even in person, they're not even catching the cues of one another's nonverbals or anything, get on board with this? And it happened so quickly. It's like a lot of linguistic changes you always think of as taking like a generation or whatever, but no, this was like, who knows how long it took, but it was a very short period of time. And now this thing means something completely different. It's pretty extraordinary.
Gen Z and Gen Alpha are cyborgs.
Well, in many ways, that's actually true.
I'm going to say on average age 9 or 10, this is attached to them.
Yeah,
they learn their communication, their society, their identity, all via this. And it leads to some really horrible developmental shit, and really is putting a fine point on the fact that the internet was probably a bad idea. But it is also giving them some fascinating communication methods and skills that we can barely even fathom, because they literally just like grew up. And it's a variation on earlier thing. Like, I started on the computer in my tweens, and that was like became normal for me. And it was, you know, dial up or whatever. But to the old people, they were like, I can't even, this is amazing. What is happening? And it's the same kind of thing, but they just, and for the most part, it makes me sad. And I've always assumed it's a sort of old timer, like, oh, you know, in my day we did it like this. But I think it makes me sad because it makes me feel disconnected, like we're separate subspecies, and we have a language barrier. We have a minor language barrier that is bigger than a lot of others, because now it's not just the terms, but the vector of communication that's different.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with your point. I used to write about this actually, that once a machine, like a phone or whatever, becomes something that you can't function without, you're functionally a cyborg. I mean, a lot of, you know, cyborgs in fiction, there you've got implants or whatever, but what's really the difference if
it's part of your being?
Yeah, if you've got to have it
part of at right. this point, this is part of my being, and
right
that's so, nothing compared to the kids who had it from jump.
You are functionally a cyborg at that point, which, you know, someone might think, oh, that's you know, that's cute, but it matters. Like you were just pointing out, it makes a difference. It changes the way you interact with your world, that is different than the way you or any other human interacted with your world before that.
Yeah.
And that's not insignificant, as you're observing.
And it's not the most normal thing to that age group.
Sure.
And it'll
sure.
be even more normal to the next one.
Exactly right. But for those of us who are not cyborgs, or even for those of us who are but are more recent, like we can remember not being one.
Yeah.
It's going to be very different for us. So yeah, that's interesting stuff for sure.
I'm trying to let this guide me going forward with what things I want. You know, we're all hitting the age where it's like, yeah, that's not a technology I'm going to give a shit about.
Right.
And now I'm getting, because I don't want to be cut off from, like, I want to set my boundaries. I don't want to accidentally set a boundary that cuts me off from huge swaths of the world that I didn't mean to, because I didn't get in on whatever. I mean, there are people now who don't have a smartphone old people mostly, or who have one but don't know how to text, that would suck. I'm trying to imagine, like, not knowing how to text. Mm-hmm. Like, well, that would, I mean, I'd be happy with it because I wouldn't know what I was missing, but I would be cut off from so much. And so I keep an eye out. I'm like, is this one of these technologies that I'm going to need to learn, or I'm going to be done? Or is this one that my life can go on forever without having this one?
Well, our generation, you know, getting back to what Stu asked about, our generation has already benefited from using our machines as memory aids, right? Because one of the things I forget is that I used to be really good at remembering is I might not remember the name of an actor.
You forgot what he remembered. But
I might not remember the name of actor, but I can say I saw them before in something else, and I can say the thing I saw them in. But
yeah,
not so much anymore. I know I've seen them before, but I'll have to look them up to remember what I saw them in. But I have my phone, so I can do it, right? There's a lot of other things. I'll look up something quick on Wiki if I can't remember. And so as my memory goes, my phone helps me still function the way I did before my memory was going. And another thing is artificial intelligence. As the older I get, the less energy and bandwidth I have to like investigate certain things or ask certain questions or do certain kinds of research. I can get AI to do it. You know, I have to be careful because it hallucinates, right? But I can get AI to do it. And so now a lot of the functionality in my memory or my research or my whatever that is going as I get older, I'm augmenting with my machine, so I don't really lose that functionality. Yeah. And previous generations couldn't do that.
And AI's become like Wikipedia for me, where it's like, okay, I'll let it answer if it doesn't matter.
Yeah, right.
But you know what? I've had that opinion about Wikipedia for many, 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 many years. And I've recently noticed, I think my definition of what doesn't matter is.
Right, right.
There's a lot of shit I take as gospel off of Wikipedia now that I'm like, maybe.
Yeah,
I
gotta be
careful. And so I'm like, so what's the AI going to do? Because, yeah, when it first started, and I'm still pissed, like, there's a new Samsung helper AI or whatever, and I can't, like, I don't use it. And every once in a while, there's a certain combination of buttons I hit that it's like, oh, do you want to? I'm like, no, fuck off. I don't want it. But like Google, when you do a Google search and the AI thing pops up, I used to hate that. And most of the time I'm like, actually, that's pretty much the answer I was like.
Well, so, but then you have the newer generation that they are leaning on those tools. I mean, we're leaning on them because we're getting old and need to. They're leaning on them because they can. Yeah, so like that's a whole different experience. Whole different experience.
One of my nibblings was having trouble in spelling, and it came up during a parent-teacher conference. And the teacher was like, yeah, so-and-so's having trouble in spelling. And they were like, okay, what do you want us to do? They're like, we don't really care. I mean, we're letting you know, but they have their phones. They didn't quite say, but they basically were like, we don't really care if they know how to spell. We're letting you know. And we're noting it, but we don't, it's not going to matter in their lives. And I wanted to be mad about it. And I kind of still am, but I'm like, but they're not wrong.
Well, and grammar
it barely
too.
Matters. I am a pretty darn good speller, and that barely fucking matters anymore.
Yeah.
And grammar even I'm starting to get too. Lazy about it in my texts and things. I'll type though, T-H-O, most of the time now.
I mean, I use Grammarly since I started school because it was offered to me for free. And I thought, what the heck? Honestly, probably 6 times out of 10, I didn't take their suggestions because it's still not like perfect or whatever.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of times where I was like, oh crap. Yeah, that is better. You know?
And I as I've said before, I hate Grammarly because I feel it is taking my job from me. I know I don't really have a job, but it's like one of the few skills I have.
Like I said, even though I probably only took its suggestion a third of the time, I was glad it was there because
I'm here for.
When
you
I
probably actively
I really
hurt our
it.
Friendship. I'm your Grammarly.
When I liked its suggestion, please. When I liked its suggestion, I really liked it.
There's got to be a come to grandma thing. It is.
Come to Grammarly.
come sit on Grammarly's lap and tell her what kind of day you've had. I love you, Grammarly. Remember when you were a kid and Grammarly would bake you those fresh cookies? They probably weren't that good, but you were a kid. In your mind, they were the best thing ever.
Or bread, fresh bread. That was always good.
Grammarlies don't care like they used. Grammarlies used to be the heart of the family, and now Grammarlies are getting tattoos and they're going on cruises, and it's Grammarly was the heart of the American family, and now Grammarly. See, now I'm mixing up because my mother-in-law is actually called Grammy by her grandchildren. It's like you're wanting to slip to Grammy.
So on Freya's birthday, it's I know when people listen to this it won't be, but on Freya's birthday I want to give an update. So we have confirmed that she knows how to say grandpa and says grandpa sometimes. When she calls me pop, that's just something she made up. She doesn't have to call me that. It's just not because she can't say grandpa. She, for whatever reason, this is a nickname that she came up with for reasons that we don't understand or can't fathom.
Okay, you're not getting the entire conversation we just had. She's what? Gen Two. Beta?
Oh, okay,
she's
yeah.
Gen Beta, right?
Yeah, it's like, yeah, right.
The most, she is 2. She has probably, almost certainly watched the first 3 seasons of Arrested Development on her own time. And she liked Pop. That's what they call Jeffrey Tambor's character there. So you're underestimating this 2-year-old.
She doesn't seem to call the other grandfather that. So something I've done, you know, or said, or whatever.
I've always assumed you fart a lot. I don't hang out with you in person, but I've assumed. So that's a good sound.
This is my theory. There is that book, you know, Hop on Pop, that book.
Yes, that is a book.
And one of the things she likes to do when she comes over is, so Abby and I, you know, we have a furniture set and we've got, you know, I sit in this chair and then there's a little console here and then her chair. She likes to stand on that console and literally fall, like trust fall, right down onto me. She loves to do that. She'll do it over and over and over again. So maybe she's the hop on pop and pop. Oh, pop. Okay.
Yeah.
See?
She's like, if I call somebody pop, according to this document, I am legally allowed to jump on them. But who in this space do I most want to jump on? Let me think.
That guy over there.
Grandpa's been needing some payback.
Yeah. But it's
hey, Grandpa, I'm going to call you Pop. don't worry about why. Let me climb up on the center console here. You just hold still.
That's what it's like.
Good. All right, Pop.
Because in my head.
Love you. Suck it. Oh,
in my head, there's 2 reasons kids will call a grandparent other than say grandpa. And that is because the parents do. And so they just copy that, or they can't say it. And so they come up with a different thing.
That's my father-in-law is called Humpa.
Yeah.
And that's just because that's what they could say.
Neither one of those things are a thing. Her parents call me grandpa every time. They never call me. Well, they have started because she does. And she can say it because we've heard her say it. And I think she calls the other grandfather that. So like, what are you doing?
Do any other family members jump on you?
her brother does. She copied him. So.
All right. Know. Did he call you anything special before he did it?
Nope. No, she made this up, not him. I don't know. I don't know.
She might be a marketing genius.
It's crazy. It's like, it fascinates me because it's like, this isn't how this is supposed to go. And I don't mind, of course, it's adorable, but it's like, why? How does this happen? This isn't how this works usually, but it's funny. It's funny to me.
I'm sad. I didn't come up with an excuse to jump on you before this big break.
I do think that is my theory. She's the hop on pop, right? And she likes to do it to her own dad at their house. So it's like, well, he's pop, right? Maybe. And I'm pop. See, I think that's my theory.
Pop the elder. Famously.
I don't know. And I don't know how long it'll
younger,
last because,
younger.
like I said, she does call me grandpa sometimes, so maybe it'll fade away, but I
And
haven't
because
heard.
eventually it'll probably produce an ulcer if she keeps hitting the same spot. Also, spoiler alert, she's going to get bigger.
Oh, yeah. Like when her brother does it, who's four, it's harder than it used to be when he did it. But, like, yeah, she'll just stand there and she will fall. Literally
and
fall.
He just says, fuck you, old man, when he does it. So. All right. We are over time. We haven't even done our side quest yet. So choose a number between 1 and 8.
One.
I mean, we could get into some mathematical arguments about between.
Yeah, that's not really between.
I'll take it. I'll take it.
I'm assuming you are inclusive when you say that.
I really need to sit down and look all of these because I am confident we have not had this one. But I feel like we've had essentially this exact same one. So, I don't know. A little side quest for this week. Enter cryosleep. Go to bed early tonight or sleep in tomorrow morning. And the quote is from a beloved sci-fi character, Harriet Tubman. Every great dream begins with a dreamer. Always remember, you have within you the strength, the patience, and the passion to reach for the stars, to change the world. When did she say that?
I find that somewhat unbelievable. I mean, not that she wouldn't say an inspirational thing, but that sounds so Hallmark. It doesn't sound like...
Right?
Yeah, it doesn't... Something's
Did
not right
she
there.
Inspire the entire greeting card industry long after her death?
I don't mean... I'm not trying it's to just, insult her, by the way. Maybe she did say that, and it's
no,
fine.
No,
but...
no. I am with you. That's the thing. It's this is not an issue of sentiment... specifically or eloquence or education or it's aesthetic.
Yeah, it sounds like one of those things that you see on the internet and then it says Abraham Lincoln and you're like, what?
Yeah, it sounds a little platitude-y in a way.
Yeah.
I would expect, but I don't know, but I'm a white guy. So my knowledge of Harriet Tubman is probably a paragraph in a history book I read in a junior high year. But didn't she kind of get recognized afterwards and got to go like make speeches and do?
Oh yeah. You can definitely find quotes from her that are different from that.
Yeah. But what I mean is she went into a phase. She had a phase in her life where being a speaker was sort of a
thing. Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
And maybe at that point you start constructing your things more and you come up with, I don't know. It's weird. We love you, Harriet. You did a great job. And I don't disagree with this sentiment. These two white guys who were born decades after you died, we want to know if you're okay. This doesn't sound like you. You okay, Harriet Tubman? How you doing?
It doesn't sound like a often a famous 19th century person who is saying really profound things. It doesn't sound like that.
I think that's it. It sounds very modern.
Very modern. Yep,
it
very
sounds
modern.
There we go. Now we're not insulting anybody. Phew.
But
Are
also
we even allowed to be talking about Harriet Tubman. I don't
also,
know if the
also
two of us
modern,
qualified.
Modern, not just in its in the words that are selected and whatever, but also it doesn't feel like a very deep thing.
Yeah, it has a saccharine nature that associate more with modern pop philosophy.
Exactly, that's exactly what I'm getting at.
In its composition, it's
yeah,
not
yeah, Yeah.
Again, I'm not. There is no problem with having this thought and sharing it with people. It's a good thought. But we're just we've heard a little bit about what you went through, Harry Tubman. It doesn't sound great, so we're just checking in. PTSD is real.
It lacks the gravitas that we usually associate with historical figures.
But also mostly women, but specifically Harriet Tubman and other ones. The archetype and the reality have been so blurred at this point.
Granted, yeah.
Where I'm like, you could tell me anything from Harriet Tubman. I'm like, that might be true. It also might be a super big lie. And I've seen so many iterations of her done in comedic style and occasionally in dramatic style, and they're all very different. And anytime something comes out about her, people are like historical issues. And I don't know shit about Harriet Tubman.
I mean,
and that's on me.
I mean, let's face it. The quote, "Mushrooms give me gas," Abraham Lincoln. That might be a thing. That might be something he really said. He was a human being. He said ordinary, mundane, banal things. That's not the point, though, here. Is like if
as Abraham Lincoln once said, "Hi, I'm Abraham."
The point is, if you're quoting somebody, it's probably because you're taking it from a thing that they probably crafted very specifically to inspire or to inform or whatever else. And if you put it on a little card, you know, you're not just quoting a casual conversation they were having, you know, with their family at breakfast.
Do you know who gets the worst fake comments attributed to them? Like,
I thought it was Abraham Lincoln.
Abraham Lincoln is up there.
Yeah.
But and actually, now that I'm saying this is Western, because I'll bet you Confucius beats fucking
everything. Oh, yeah, probably. Probably.
I have been told so many things that dude said, and he cannot have said a lot of that.
Yeah, right.
No, the number one, for some reason, Churchill.
Oh.
Like, most of the quotes you have heard from Churchill are not real.
And yeah, okay, but here's...
Lincoln is a close second, and sometimes they trade him.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes, well, people are like, oh, Abraham said that. Actually, he said that. Like, it's all over, yeah.
Yeah.
Church, I don't know why, but it's just like, there are whole books of fake Churchill quotes. Like, people are convinced he said fucking everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And occasionally it's misappropriated and it's somebody else's quote, but most of the time it's just bullshit.
I think when we were growing up, you know, before the era of the internet, that kind of thing still happened. And I think it was Ben Franklin was the one that was probably misquoted.
Yeah, he's got a lot.
For a long time.
Also, I was taught this in school. I don't know if it's true. Churchill was a closet nudist. Apparently, whoever the first lady was, Eleanor Roosevelt, hated when he would come on state visits because he would be given quarters and he would just walk around naked in them. And so you could walk in on a naked Churchill way too. It made her very uncomfortable. Supposedly, it was the thing. Again, I was literally taught that by a teacher in school. It was not in a book. I was taught that by a teacher in school. I've learned since then some of my teachers are liars. So, we are so over time, and I'm so sick of the crap. And I got places to go. Decora, specifically.
Yeah.
So, if you know what Harriet Tubman's whole deal was, tell us in the blog. What's her deal?
Yeah.
Is she doing okay? Go to the blog, themagicaldoghat.com, or comment on YouTube. But most importantly, email us, themagicaldoghat@gmail.com, so you can be famous like Stu, the most famous person to come out of this podcast. Also, Pilot House Band? Is that the YouTube?
I don't know.
Because if you just search YouTube for Pilot House, you mostly get videos about boats.
Yep, my boats.
You had sent me a link and I didn't bother to use it because I was like, I'll just search for it. And that was bad. So then I used the link. So I was your ninth subscriber.
Oh, that's nice. Thank you.
The videos are amazing. Also, I clearly haven't listened to your music before.
What do you mean?
I mean, just the style is not what I think my sum total of you knowing me knowing your music is the movie we made. You played one of your songs over the end credits.
Oh, right. Well,
and I now think that's the only song I heard. So I just assumed they all kind of sounded that sort of pop folky vibe or whatever. And then I was like, oh, I got to play that. And I played a random one and it was not at all like that. And I was like, wow. And then I turned to Trish and I was like, I didn't mention that's William. You hear the singing? That's William singing. She's like, oh, I didn't notice. Because it's one of those, if you tell somebody that you can tell it's you. But if you don't know beforehand, it's not quite there. It's also a much younger voice. So that's
there were two pieces of music in the film we made, one at the beginning, one at the end.
Okay.
And these were Chris's compositions. And for the songs on Pilot House, many of them are a song that Chris composed, played for me, and then I created the melody and the lyrics. And so the melody and lyrics are the only thing I'm responsible for. There are a few songs where I came to him with a song idea and told him what, asked him, you know, well, play this. This is the chord progression or whatever. And so I did have some more say in some of the music and some of the songs, but for most of them, he composed a thing. And so you can tell, because in some of them, if you listen carefully, you can hear a piano or a guitar playing a second melody along with the melody I'm singing, because that's the melody he came up with. And he almost always expected whatever lyrics I came up with, I would sing according to the melody he came up with. And I almost never did. I made a new melody. You're a
jerk like that.
But when he recorded me, when we put the recording down, he left the guitar or the piano, whatever it was, playing the melody he came up with. So a lot of our songs have two melodies, if you listen closely.
So anyway, check that out. I think it's Sorry. Pilot House Band.
I did go to YouTube and just search for Pilot House Band, and one of the song, you know, one of the videos are okay. Came up. So that is one way to find it. Pilot House Band, yes.
Don't just look for Pilot House, because it's mostly about boats.
Mostly about boats, yeah.
But check that. So check that out. The videos are insane. Like, she did too much. Like, a lyric video doesn't have to go that hard. Like,
this is what I tell her.
Music videos.
This is what I told her.
Happen to have lyrics in them.
Yeah, she says, like, oh, I'm going to do this one. What do you think I should do? And I say, how about a solid purple background with just lyrics? How about that? You'd be done with almost, it in 30 minutes.
I watch a lot of lyric videos. The most complicated they get, and the most common, is some cool picture, still image.
Yeah.
Lyrics in the front.
No, she wants to tell a story.
It's less. It goes from that down. I've had some of this just black screen lyrics appear. These are full. There's video. I mean, it all has a very Creative Commons vibe, but it's just tons of stuff and stories being told and. Things that look like clips out of movies, even though, again, I'm sure they're sort of stock video or whatever.
They are.
Just she makes really elaborate. She makes them cool, but I'm like, it's a lyric video. That's not what you need for that. That's
I know. That's what I tell her. But she does it, and she likes doing it. Yeah.
And they're real cool to look at. So. All right. Get out of here. I'm sick of all of you. No, I love you all. I am sick of him, so I have to go. But the rest of you come back next week. And we'll see if he's still here.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.